If you are just coming in from the lobby, there are some handouts there on that back table that you might find helpful in our study this morning. We are going to try to finish our look at the Bible in geology this morning. We are talking about some topics this quarter that are some things that perhaps we're not as familiar with and some things that are interesting at least to look at. But we're trying to look at this overall topic of the Bible and science. And how does the Bible correspond with what is being found in science today? And maybe better said, how does what is being found in science today correspond with what the Bible says? Here's a question. What is our standard? Is our standard the Bible, or is our standard science? What is it that we trust? Is it what the Bible says, or is it what scientists are discovering or trying to affirm? You've got to decide where your standard is. You've got to decide where you place your trust. And if you place your trust in what the Bible says, then whatever discoveries come out, whatever man will come out and say, here's what we found, and it proves evolution. Here's what we found, and it proves that the Bible is just a man-made document. It's not really from God. If your faith is in the Bible, then whatever man says is not going to change your faith. On April 9th this year, Pete Brown brought this to me. Thank you, Pete, because I don't get the newspaper. Here in the newspaper is a headline is Window into Human Evolution. I don't know if you saw the article about a man and his son who went to South Africa, and they brought back some bones that prove evolution. They have found some of these bones that are apparently a part of the missing link between where humans are today and where we came from. Does that destroy your faith? Does that make you question your faith? Interesting how strongly people want to run down this road to say that we have evolved, and yet there is no evidence for it. Very briefly, I want to review this matter of geology that we started last week in case you were not here, and all of this is in your handout. But geology is, and I asked last week, what is geology? And everybody just said rocks. And that's what it is. It's a study of rocks. It's looking at the earth, the history of the earth, and it's looking at the fossils that are found of plants and animals in the earth and studying those things. And geology is one of those areas where evolutionists think they've got some of their strongest proofs for what they believe and what they teach. But it's interesting when you look at the evidence that the evidence just does not support what they want it to support. There's two views of looking at the history of the earth. One of them is called uniformitarianism, and what a fun word. We don't have any deaf in here. I guess they bailed out and went to a different class because we talked about uniformitarianism last week, and I always forget this word. It's like catastrophe, but it's an ism on the end. Catastrophism. If you have a hard time understanding that and you're hearing, guess what? If you're deaf, try to understand that. Here's uniformitarianism. And it's basically evolutionists saying that things have gradually, not big changes, but they've just gradually evolved and changed over time. And then there's catastrophism that says something happened in the past that was major. There was some major violent act in the past that has caused what we are finding in geology today. Is the flood that we read about in the book of Genesis, the universal worldwide flood, do you think that that could have caused any kind of changes to the earth's surface? You know it would. And you know it did. Two views. Which one does the evidence support? You go and look at this geologic timetable. And I know this is difficult for us to imagine. But in the science textbooks that our children have in their schools, this particular one is out of the Encyclopedia Britannica. You will find geological column or geologic timetable. that man has put together with just his imagination. And man has said that millions of years ago, everything started out with just the first kind of life forms. And then what? Well, everything started to evolve, and you go up the timetable and you see these images of things starting to change and starting to evolve as time goes from the hundreds of millions and starts to count down. And eventually you see the mammals come on the scene and the birds and the primates, and still we're 100 to 200 million years ago, until finally about 2 million years ago, we came along. You see, life, according to evolutionists, life has only existed on this earth for about 2 million years, human life. They say the earth has been in existence for about 4.5 to 5 billion years. As you look at this geological timetable, the problem is that this exists nowhere on earth except on paper as scientists have created it. It only comes from their assumptions based upon what they are finding in the survey and the study of geology. The Bible says that the earth and our planet and life did not come into existence over eons of time. It happened in 6 days. 6 literal days. And that this earth was created in order that it might be inhabited by man. Not to be in existence for billions of years without man, but that it might be inhabited by man. And that man might have dominion over the animals. And Jesus said that man has been on the earth from the beginning. Go back to the question we asked at the very beginning. What's our standard? Where do you put your faith? Is your faith in what the Bible says 100%? Or is your faith in, well, these brilliant scientists, they might come up with something that might cast a little bit of doubt upon what the Bible says? How strong is your faith in what the Bible teaches? Last week we began looking at some evidence to show that this geologic timetable is anything but accurate. We started looking at some evidence. Remember, this is just a chart that man has made up with the presupposition in his mind that evolution has happened. And so man finds these fossils and he says, okay, here's a fossil of a mammal, so it goes in this level. Here's a fossil of an amphibian, and it goes in this level. Here's a fossil of a bird, so it goes in this level, because here's the chart he has made up, and so then everything fits into his chart. It's a little bit backwards. But because of his bias in this matter, because of what he's already presupposed, everything has to fit into his model instead of looking at things honestly. We talked last week, and we'll go on to something else, but we talked last week that there is missing levels of strata all around the world. You see, if this geologic timetable was really accurate, then what we should find are these levels of strata. These levels, these strata layers where we find these fossils, shouldn't you find them in order? Shouldn't we find a place where there's a strata of fish, and then on top of that is a strata of some metazoa, and then on top of that are some land plants, and then on top of that are some amphibians, and then on top of that are some trees, and then on top of that are some reptiles, and then on top of that are dinosaurs? Shouldn't we find a place on the earth where all of this just nicely stair steps up and you have every bit of this in one location? Wouldn't you like to find that? Evolutionists would love to find it. Doesn't exist any place on this earth. In fact, if you were to take every fossil that has been found and to place it within their time structure, you find every fossil that's been found and you say, okay, it goes in this order. If you took all of those layers of rock and stacked them up, it's been estimated it would be 130 miles high. You would have to have ground, you would have to have earth 130 miles deep in order to sustain all of these fossils. The earth's crust is only 25 to 30 miles deep. So you can't fit 130 into 30, can you? It just doesn't work. So we looked at some examples last week where you go and you find places where there are major gaps like this one, where there are some 200 or more million of years in between the layers. You'll have a layer of rock here and a layer of rock sitting right on top of it. But what we've been told is that there's actually a gap there. There's 200 million years in between those two layers. Seems kind of silly, doesn't it? Not quite as silly as these strata layers being flip-flopped. Now, that's not the shoe that you're wearing. That's the fact that some of these layers are not found in the right order. They're found in a different order. They're found out of sequence where a layer that is very ancient, it should be on the bottom, right? The old stuff's down here. The new stuff's up here. The stuff that's very ancient is actually found on top of the younger rock. How does that happen? If all of this is supposed to proceed from the bottom to the top, how do you get a layer that's supposed to be on the bottom on top of a layer that's at the top? That doesn't make sense. And here we find these various layers, they think, are laid down in precisely the order that are there. Let me give you some examples. Near Yellowstone Park, there's an area of this Paleozoic strata. Here it is, 250 million years ago to 500 million years ago. There's a layer of this strata on top of the tertiary strata. Now, how'd that happen? How did something that was 250 million years older than the tertiary wind up on top of it? Doesn't that seem strange? I mean, shouldn't it be in the order that it is here? Up in Montana, near Glacier National Park, or actually is a part of Glacier National Park, they found another area where there is some Precambrian. You can't get much older than Precambrian on this geologic timetable. It's the very bottom layer. Here's a layer that's over 550 million years old that has been found on top of a layer that it is 400 to 500 billion years older than. How'd that happen? How'd something so old get on top of something so young? You want to see what they say? They say, well, what happened was that this Precambrian layer, by the way, it's 350 miles wide by 6 miles deep. That's how big this piece of rock is, right? 350 miles wide by 6 miles deep. They say it was thrust over the Cretaceous layer from a distance of 35 to 40 miles away. So basically, somebody 35 to 40 miles away picked up a rock that was 350 miles wide, 6 miles deep, and threw it on top of the other one. I'm serious. That's their explanation. Seriously. We're supposed to believe that rather than, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Stephen? Some big catastrophe could cause one rock to rise and to go on top of another rock? Sure. How does this happen? How do they explain that? One of the better ones is over in the Swiss Alps, where you have a layer, and this doesn't look as big of a deal to you, perhaps, but you have a layer that's about 200 million years out of place, but what happens here is that it's all over the place. It's not in any kind of order. On the left is the order that the evolutionists say is supposed to be in. But here you find these layers, they're kind of out of order, and this Ocoian layer is on the bottom of all of these other layers. And we have no idea what happened to the Pelosian layer. It's gone. It's another one of those missing layers. So here's all of these layers mixed up. They're out of order. You want to know how they explain this one? This is fun. They say that this is a piece of Africa on top of Europe. The quote is, the Mython represents an outlier of Africa resting on Europe. Right, uh-huh. So somebody just picked up a part of Africa and put it on top of Europe. That makes sense, right? Or, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Or somebody just picked up a rock and moved it. Somebody just picked up a part of Africa and stuck it over on top of Europe. There's layers that are missing. There are layers that are flip-flopped. How do we evaluate this? Here's one scientist's evaluation of this, where he says that the actual number, the actual percentage of areas where you actually see that progressive order in the layers, he says, is very small. There's a lot of this flip-flop. There's a lot of these missing strata areas. He says these complex life forms are often found resting directly on the most basic. It's out of order. It's not where it should be. Another man indicated, this director of the British Geological Survey, he said, had these sections, all these sections that are flip-flopped, out of place, missing, he said, if all of these sections had been planned for the purposes of deception, if somebody had purposefully planned all of these things out of place in order to deceive everybody, he says they could not have been more skillfully devised. If they were trying to deceive us, it worked. They couldn't have done a better job in deceiving us. No one coming first to this ground would suspect that what appears to be normal, it appears, they're looking at these layers of rock, and boy, it just appears that they were put in this order. That appears to be normal. He would say, nobody coming to this layer of rock in what appears to be normal would actually find out that it's really not so. When a geologist finds things in this condition, he may be excused if he begins to wonder whether he himself is not really standing on his own head. It's all upside down, and what they want us to believe is, well, it just kind of got thrown over in that direction. But God didn't create the world. They try to explain away these things that make no sense when you're looking at this geologic timetable that they have simply made up. So let's look at some of their expectations and look at it from the sense of reality. We've looked at what they say the geologic timetable does. We've looked at some examples, these missing strata, the flip-flops, that just say that there's something wrong with their model. Let's look at some of their expectations and then look at the reality of it. Here's what they say about this geologic timetable. What they are telling us is that the earliest, the lowest levels of the strata would contain sparse life forms. Let me show you this. Don't look at the left side of the screen, all right? What they're saying is, down here, you're going to find sparse life forms because everything's just beginning to have life. So you're going to find very sparse life forms there. Let me go back to this assumption. With a gradual growth as you move up the column. So there's not going to be much down at the bottom, and you'll gradually see it grow as you go up. Except what you find when you go to the reality of geologic surveys is that there is a sudden explosion of life right here in Cambrian rocks. Remember, they say in the Cambrian rocks, all we should find are some fishes and, you know, some of those things that are just squiggly and gooey, but they don't have any form to them. Farthest thing from being a human being. But what you actually find when you go and you survey these lowest of rocks, the Cambrian rocks as they designate it, is that every major invertebrate animal group is found in the Cambrian level with no observable ancestors. What does that mean? There's no obvious evolution that they have grown from this point over to here. You look at the Cambrian rock where there shouldn't exist, and what's there? All of these fossils that shouldn't be until we get up in these higher layers, they're all found in that layer of rock. Now, how did that happen? Did it happen according to their evolutionary time scale? Couldn't have. Totally directly opposed to their evolutionary time scale. Could it have happened because of the flood? When you put everything underwater, when you put the entire earth underwater, what's going to happen? When Katrina hit New Orleans and many of those houses were underwater, when the water receded and was gone, did the house look like it did before the water came? Were there any changes? Any differences that were noticeable? Were things on the wall maybe not on the wall anymore? Were things that were on the floor maybe up higher and not on the floor anymore? How'd that happen? How did that rug that was on the carpet, How did that end up on the ceiling fan? That's supposed to be on the floor. How did these things get mixed up? And how did that was on the wall and now it's on the floor and everything's out of place? How did that happen? Did it evolve that way? We look at a flood and we know exactly how things get mixed up from where man might expect to find them. Here's a scientist named George Simpson. He has been called Mr. Evolution. So what do you think he believes in? He says there must be some special reason why varied fossils are suddenly present. Yeah, there must be some reason that these fossils are found in the Cambrian level. This major mystery, he says, what's this all about? Of the history of life has naturally excited a great deal of argument and speculation. He just says it's a mystery. We don't know how it's happened. He admits that it's there because you can't do anything but admit it. But he says, boy, you know, there's big speculation. We don't know how it's happened. Here's another evolutionist, Walter Sullivan. He calls this one of the major puzzles of evolution. He says, for this sudden appearance of life 600 million years ago, there is virtually no record of how these divisions came about. Except for Genesis 6, of course. I'm sure he meant to say that. Thus, the entire first part of evolutionary history is missing. The first part of evolution, we don't have it. Really? If you don't have the first part of evolution, then what do you have? You don't have evolution. If you don't have the evidence, you have no proof to back up your claims. Many admit they just don't have a clue why all of these life forms are in this lower level when they shouldn't have been. Some have claimed that perhaps they evolved each in one enormous step. Maybe they just took one giant step in evolution and came into existence all in that one level. Of course, evolution says everything happens gradually, right? Look at what Mr. Simpson says about that. He rejects it. Mr. Simpson says, no, that doesn't work in evolution. Remember, he's Mr. Evolution. That doesn't work in evolution. Such a phenomenon, this is interesting, has never been observed. What kind of phenomenon? The giant, enormous step in evolution. He says, uh-uh. No, that's never been observed. It has not been concretely described, and it need not be taken seriously. That's what he is saying about an enormous step in evolution in this one layer. What would be interesting, I think, would be use his own words against him about the whole theory of evolution. Take his words and forget this enormous step. Put it in the context of all of evolution. All of evolution has never been observed. Use his words. All of evolution has never been concretely described. There's no evidence. Therefore, all of evolution, folks, we don't even need to take it seriously. There's no evidence for that to be found. Here's another expectation. Their first one, about the earliest being in the lowest part, that doesn't work. Here's another expectation. If their geologic timetable is true, then what we are going to find is that these earliest types of life, the ones on the bottom of the column, are going to be very simple. And then as you progress up the table, they're going to become even more and more complex. But as you've already guessed, if all of those life forms are found in the Cambrian level, there is going to be a complexity of life forms throughout this geologic timetable. In these sedimentary deposits where all of these fossils are laid out are found billions and billions of fossils of highly complex forms of life, including sponges, corals, jellyfish, worms, mollusks, crustaceans. In fact, every one of the major invertebrate forms of life have been found in that Cambrian, that lowest level, the Cambrian rock layers, including, and you've probably heard about, the trilobite. If you've been here for any of the creation evolution seminars that we have had, you've heard about this little creature and how complex this little creature is. He's not one of these little single-cell life forms that has no form and has no complexity to it. It's very simple. The trilobite is very complex. In fact, as you have in your notes, the math that was necessary in order to explain the complexity of how the eyes of the trilobite worked. The math wasn't even created until the last century. This is not a simple organism. And yet the trilobite, which is now extinct, has been found in the Cambrian level. How did that happen? How did something so complex end up there? And when you look at the evolutionary cycle, if it's supposed to go from simple to complex, there's no difference between animals that we have alive today, the animals that are here now, there's no difference between them and the fossils that we are finding of some of their ancestors. A crustacean today looks exactly like the crustacean did in that Cambrian fossil. Crustaceans haven't changed. Mollusks, they're all the same. If evolution is true, let's say we find a crustacean in that Cambrian strata level, 500 million years old. Wouldn't you think that crustacean would look a little bit different than the crustaceans we have today? Wouldn't they have evolved? We're talking about 500 years of, they're supposed to improve, they're supposed to become more complex, and yet they all look the same. Which is why we're able to identify what kind of fossil it is. If they all changed and evolved and they didn't look anything like they do today, how would we even identify that was a mollusk or a crustacean fossil if it didn't look like anything that it does today? It's not possible. The fact that their chart demands that it go from the simple to the very complex in these higher levels just doesn't work. Here's a third expectation. If you start at those lowest strata and you move upward, you should find a substantially complete scale of development. Remember, they say that we started off as a single-cell organism, and you work up that scale all the way to the top where you get to the human being. And so we should find a complete development scale, shouldn't we? Shouldn't we find everything that has existed from that single-cell organism all the way up to the human being? Shouldn't we find everything in between? But we don't. And we don't even come close. You've heard about the missing link, right? Every time they find some bones, we found the missing link. They always use it in the singular. The reality is that there are missing links. It is not just that, oh, if we could find this one bone. This is what they lead us to believe. If we could just find this one bone, we will have put the final touches. We will have put the final piece into the evolutionary cycle. If we can just find this, doesn't that seem silly to you? If the evolutionary cycle is real, shouldn't there just be more than one bone out there to prove it? Shouldn't the earth be littered with all of these stages of the evolutionary cycle? How is it that we're missing, according to them, just one bone? There's millions that are missing. If evolution were true, one would find these organisms in the various stages of development from the incomplete to the complete, and all of the gaps would be filled in. There wouldn't be any gaps at all. You would have thousands of these intermediate links, everything in between. The problem is we don't find a single one. Remember, they're looking for one. There ought to be thousands and millions out there, but there's not a single one to be found. When they find these fossils, when they find these creatures, every one of them is complete. They're not finding any half-formed features. You know, if we evolved from a tadpole, wouldn't you think that somewhere along the way you'd find a human with a tail wiggling out there? I mean, if we evolved from a tadpole, tadpole. What's that thing called? Tadpole? If we evolved from a tadpole, wouldn't you think somewhere along the way you'd find a human with some gills? You know, with some scales, with some weird-looking eyes, a human with a hook stuck in his mouth? I mean, come on. Somewhere along the way, you got to find something that connects the dots. And not just something, because you wouldn't find just one human being that was making that evolutionary stage. You would find millions of them. And yet, there's not a single solitary one. So here's what Charles Darwin says. You ever heard of Charles Darwin? Yeah, interesting guy, right? His famous book, The Origin of the Species, which is... Could you read The Origin of the Species in school today? I'm asking honestly. I don't know. School teachers, could you bring a copy of The Origin of the Species in and read it to your students? Any school teachers in here? Stephen, could you do it? Nicole, could you bring a copy of Charles Darwin's Origin of the Species into your classroom and read it to your students?
Probably.
Could you bring a copy of the Bible into your classroom and read it to your students? No. Huh. Isn't that strange? Mr. Charles Darwin, from which we have so much of our evolutionary theories. Why then, he says, is not every geological formation and every stratum full of these intermediate links? Good question, Charles. You know, we ought to find these missing links. We ought to find them all over the place. He says, geology assuredly does not reveal any such finely graduated organic chain. And this, perhaps, he says, is the most serious objection which can be urged. Even Darwin said, this is serious. We don't know how to answer it. The explanation lies, he says, I believe, in the extreme imperfection of the geological record. They put this chart in your kids' textbooks and they say, this is truth. This is reality. And even Charles Darwin said, I don't know about that. There's some imperfections in it. We need to take some of these quotes, give them to our children, give them to our teachers and equip them to know how to answer some of these crazy things that are being said. Here's Mr. Evolution again, talking about these gaps. He says the regular absence of these transitional forms, these links that ought to be linking us to these tadpoles, is not confined to the mammals, but is almost universal. It's found in all classes of plants, animals, everything. He says it's not just about humans, it's about everything else. We are not finding any form, any of these transitional forms to prove evolution. And yet, it's what he believed in. It's what he advocated. Yes.
What year was that quote, do you know?
George Simpson was 1950s, I believe. It was the middle of the 20th century. I can't remember the exact date. I can find it for you after class. I don't believe I have it on me. I might have it on me, but you begin looking at these things, and again, you know, regardless of that date, here's someone who advocated evolution and yet had to admit. Here's Charles Darwin, who had to admit, you know, we don't really have all of the evidence that we want on this. 1957, Nicole, on George Simpson. So, what else can we find? Well, we can find human occupation all the way through. Oh, I got another quote. I don't have time for these quotes. There's far more problems. That's your blank on that one, but I've got to get moving here. We can find fossils from humans throughout this whole chart. Now, if we can do that, wouldn't that prove that this chart did not exist over vast eons of time? I know I'm rushing through this, but I want you to see this. We have found, I say we, makes it sound like I did something. Somebody really digging in the ground somewhere in the tertiary level. Remember, this is a long time, millions of years before man came along, found a human skull. How'd it get there? In that same level, they found a thimble. What was the zebra doing with a thimble? I mean, does a zebra have any use for a thimble? In that same tertiary level, And these are in different places around the world, but these are in rocks that have been designated by scientists to be in the tertiary level. They've been found engraved letters, a capital I, a capital U, not some accidental, but with those sharp corners that you would expect on the, that were obviously put there by man, and yet they're in a level where man is not supposed to be. We have found human bones in the Cretaceous level. Here it is, hundreds of millions of years. How did they get there? Man has found dinosaur carvings in the Triassic level, 250 million years ago. Who was drawing pictures of dinosaurs before man came along? I mean, was it the little animals that were the prey, and they're hiding out in the caves and they're drawing animals of the dinosaurs and saying, look, kids, stay away from these guys, they'll eat you. Is that who's drawing the pictures? I mean, seriously, how did those images of the dinosaurs get there? We've got spoons and tools being found 300 million years ago, apparently. Who's using spoons back then? We're finding human footprints 350 million years ago. That trilobite that we talked about, there was a trilobite found in a human print. Human footprint, and not just a human footprint, it was in a sandal print. So it's not just a foot. Man was wearing sandals at this point, and a trilobite was found right in that human. How did that happen? If the trilobites lived 500 million years ago, how did a human footprint, how'd that happen? How'd the two get connected? There's no evolutionary explanation for it. The only possible explanation for any of this is the flood that we read about in our Bibles. If you take all of the fossil evidence that man has found and put it in the context of the flood, then you have explanation for everything that has happened. When God broke up the deep and all the waters came out, when the windows of heaven opened up, and when the waters overflowed the earth, it totally changed the landscape of the earth. The earth-water forces that came about as a result of the flood are adequate explanation for every bit of what man is finding in his geologic surveys. Three things real quick. I hate that I've had to rush through this, but I didn't want to spend 3 weeks on geology. It's hard enough to spend 1 week on geology and try to understand it all. Three things real quick about the flood and geology. If the earth was flooded, what we're finding could be explained by ecological environment. Meaning, are there any kangaroos living in North America besides the zoos? Do we have any kangaroos here? We have any polar bears living in Florida? I mean, are there certain animals that live in certain regions in our world today? Yes. Do you believe that before the flood it could have been the same way? That ecologically, that certain animals lived in certain regions? Well, if the earth was flooded, wouldn't that explain why some animals were found in certain places and others might not be? That would explain it. The other part of that is about the force of the water movements. If you have the waters of the flood pushing things and this, perhaps there were different channels of the water pushing these things, you would have, one, the gravity of these animals falling down through the water plus the water pushing them. A thing like the trilobite, a dense, small creature would sink much faster, be buried much deeper than something that was larger or could sustain itself more against the force of the water. Could that explain why some things are deeper than others in our studies from these rocks? Third thing to see is just the mobility difference of the animals. Would some animals drown in the water before some other animals would? Are some animals more mobile than others and could go to higher ground longer than some of the others? Could that explain why some animals are found in different places? If you use the flood of Noah's day to explain what we're finding in geology, you can explain it. If you try to use evolution's chart, you're going to get more and more confused because they cannot even explain it. 70% of where we're finding fossils are in water-laid soil and rock. That means it was put together with water and dirt coming together. Not just they died up here on a rock and they were buried. If an animal dies in the desert on a plain of rock, what happens? Eventually, the entire body disintegrates because of the elements. But when that animal is buried quickly in the waters, it's preserved. We find fossil graveyards all over the earth. I'm sorry we've had to rush through this, but here's all of the answers that we can possibly give that we've looked at to what man is saying about evolution. And it's much better explained by the flood that we read about in the Bible than it is by a silly chart for which there is absolutely no evidence. Let me come back and ask my question. Sorry, Nicole. Let me come back and ask the question that I asked at the beginning, then we're done. Where is your faith? Where is our standard? Is it in the Bible, in what it says, or is it in what man and scientists are trying to tell us? We've got to make our minds up where it is. And then once we do that, we shouldn't be swayed.